A Catra podcast conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Catra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we are strapping ourselves in for a bit of a journey. We're diving into the nature of reality itself, guided by Brian Greene's masterpiece, The Fabric of the Cosmos. You know, if you've ever had that feeling that your everyday sense of space and time is maybe just too simple, well, you're probably right. So our mission today is to give you a kind of shortcut, a way to grab some of the most profound and honestly challenging ideas in modern physics, like what is reality? Is time even real? And why did Einstein basically say the idea of a universal now is, well, meaningless?
Exactly. And the whole premise here is pretty transformative. It can feel a bit disruptive, actually. Greene essentially shows us that our intuition, this idea that we're living on some kind of fixed stage, with a clock ticking the same for everyone, it's really just a comforting story. It's something we evolved with because, you know, we deal with slow speeds and relatively short distances. But modern physics, it demands something else entirely. We have to acknowledge a universe that's dynamic, malleable, and fundamentally interconnected in ways that are hard to picture. It really forces you, the listener, to rethink existence. We move from this comfy, fixed world to a stranger, almost unbelievable cosmic truth, governed by relativity and quantum mechanics. And who better to guide us through this than Brian Greene? He's not just any theoretical physicist. He's a professor at Columbia, a leading researcher in superstring theory. And that's the field actively trying to knit together all the known forces of nature. It's the big quest.
Right. His scientific chops are undeniable. But his real superpower, maybe, is that he's just an incredibly gifted communicator, like the ultimate translator for these complex ideas. He did it before with The Elegant Universe, taking these really abstract, math-heavy concepts that describe the universe and, well, giving them narrative life, making them understandable.
That's exactly what makes this book, The Fabric of the Cosmos, so powerful. He doesn't just throw facts at you, these really bizarre facts about reality. Instead, he builds these conceptual bridges. He uses really imaginative analogies, sometimes everyday things, sometimes even pop culture references and thought experiments. He shows you, step by step, why physicists had to let go of that cozy Newtonian picture of the universe. He makes these incredibly strange theories feel, well, almost inevitable, historically and logically.
Okay, so let's unpack this intellectual journey a bit. Greene really designs the book as an expedition to re-educate us, you know, the curious non-specialist. He starts us off somewhere familiar, somewhere intuitive, Isaac Newton's universe. You know, absolute space is a fixed backdrop, a universal clock ticking away for everyone, everywhere. Simple.
But that comfort doesn't last long, does it?
Not at all. The book pretty systematically dismantles that view. First up is Einstein's relativity. It shows how space and time aren't separate things. They're fundamentally interwoven, right, and how we experience them is relative to our motion.
And then, just when you think you've got your head around that, we dive into the really weird stuff, quantum mechanics. This is where reality just sheds all certainty. It becomes probabilistic. Things aren't definitely here or there until you look. What's amazing, though, is how Greene connects all these different scales. He moves so smoothly from the absolutely massive, the Big Bang, dark energy stretching the universe apart, down to the infinitesimally small quantum entanglement, string theory. He manages to weave it all together, showing that the universe is this dynamic, unified, and really profoundly interconnected fabric. Hence the title, I suppose.
But let's start where the modern revolution really kicked off: space, time, and relativity. So Newton, he believed in absolute space, right? This fixed, invisible grid underneath everything. He even had his famous bucket argument. He said, if you spin a bucket of water, the water surface curves. And he argued that proved the water was spinning relative to this absolute unmoving space.
Right. A sort of cosmic reference frame. Seemed logical enough at the time.
Then along comes Einstein. And he has this radical insight. The speed of light has to be constant for everyone, no matter how fast you're moving towards or away from the light source.
Which sounds simple, but that one fact, it changes everything. It's the linchpin.
Totally. And the consequence of that constant speed of light is what just shatters our everyday common sense.
Because if the speed of light can't change, something else has to give when you start moving really, really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something else. It's time and distance themselves.
We talk about time dilation and length contraction.
Yeah.
What does that actually mean in practice?
Well, it means if you were to, say, fly past us in a spaceship incredibly close to the speed of light, from our perspective, your clock would appear to be ticking slower than ours.
Yeah.
And not just that, your spaceship would actually look physically shorter, contracted in the direction you're traveling. Time and space literally stretch and squeeze depending on how you're moving relative to someone else. They're elastic.
Okay, hang on. So my now isn't necessarily your now if we're moving differently.
Exactly. It leads us right into general relativity. This is where it gets even wilder.
Right, because Einstein didn't stop there. He realized gravity isn't some mysterious force pulling things across space, like Newton thought.
No, instead he showed that mass and energy actually warp the fabric of space-time itself. They create curves and dips in it.
The classic analogy helps here, right? The bowling ball on a rubber sheet.
Yeah, it's perfect. Imagine space-time as a stretched rubber sheet. You place a heavy bowling ball, say, the sun in the middle. It creates a deep depression, a curve in the sheet. Now, if you roll a smaller marble, a planet nearby, it doesn't orbit because the bowling ball is pulling it. It orbits because it's following the straightest possible path through the curved geometry of the sheet. Gravity is the curvature.
Wow. So planets are just coasting along the lines dictated by the warp space-time around the sun?
Pretty much. And this is why space and time are inseparable. They are fundamentally unified into this four-dimensional thing we call space-time. And different observers, moving relative to each other, are essentially just slicing through this four-dimensional space-time loaf at different angles.
Slicing the space-time loaf. I like that.
Yeah, and because they're slicing it differently, they won't agree on what constitutes a simultaneous moment, what constitutes now.
Mm.
Your now is just one slice through the loaf, and mine might be tilted relative to yours.
Okay, that idea of space-time being a unified block definitely messes with our concept of time, which brings up another huge question Green tackles. Why does time seem to flow only forward? Because if you look at the fundamental laws of physics, like gravity making planets orbit, they seem to work just fine forwards or backwards in time. Run a film of Earth orbiting the sun backwards, it still looks physically plausible, right?
Absolutely. That's the paradox. The fundamental laws themselves don't seem to have a built-in direction for time. So why do we only remember the past and not the future? Why do things break but not unbreak? Green shows the answer isn't in the basic laws of motion, but it's statistical. It comes down to the second law of thermodynamics and this concept called entropy.
Entropy. That's basically a measure of disorder or randomness, isn't it?
Exactly. And the second law states that in any closed system, entropy disorder tends to increase over time. It never spontaneously decreases.
And this is where those everyday examples really click. We all know a tidy room doesn't stay tidy by itself. Right, it naturally gets messy over time. Or think about an egg. You can drop it, it breaks, the yolk runs everywhere, high disorder, but you'll never see the scrambled egg spontaneously gather itself back into a perfect, unbroken shell.
Never. It's not that it's strictly forbidden by the laws of physics for every single molecule to reverse its path. It's just astronomically improbable. There are vastly more ways for things to be disordered than ordered.
So the universe is always moving towards a state of greater messiness, statistically speaking.
Precisely. And if the universe is constantly progressing towards maximum disorder, maximum entropy, that strongly implies it must have started in a state of incredibly high order, very low entropy.
The Big Bang.
The Big Bang. That initial remarkably ordered state is the key. Our personal linear experience of time, the feeling of flowing from past to future, the ability to remember yesterday but not tomorrow, it's all just a consequence of the universe unfolding from that special low entropy beginning towards its inevitable, more disordered future.
Yeah.
Our sense of time's arrow is painted by entropy.
That's quite a perspective. Tying our everyday feeling of time passing to the initial conditions of the entire universe. But okay, speaking of the universe, when we look out there, Green delivers this other bombshell. Shifting to cosmology, he points out that ordinary matter, like everything we see, touch, stars, planets, us, that's less than 5% of the total stuff in the cosmos.
Yeah, that number always floors me. Less than 5%. We are literally just the foam on top of this vast, unseen ocean.
So what's the other 95%?
Well, about 27% of it is something called dark matter. We can't see it. It doesn't interact with light. But we know it's there because we see its gravitational effects. It's like this invisible scaffolding, providing the extra gravitational glue needed to hold galaxies together. Without it, based on the visible matter alone, galaxies should be flying apart. So there's much more mass than meets the eye.
Okay, invisible glue, that's weird enough. But then there's the rest.
And then there's the really perplexing part. Roughly 68% is dark energy. This isn't matter at all. It seems to be some kind of energy inherent in space itself, acting like like anti-gravity.
Anti-gravity.
Yeah, it's this mysterious repulsive force that's actually causing the expansion of the universe to accelerate. Not slow down, as you might expect from gravity, but speed up faster and faster. We really don't know what it is yet.
So the universe on the grand scale is dominated by things we can't see and don't understand. Okay. What about the very small scale, the quantum realm?
Ah, yes. If the large scale is defined by unseen forces, the small scale is defined by, well, uncertainty. When we pivot to the quantum realm, that smooth, predictable clockwork universe of Einstein's relativity just goes out the window.
This is where things get fuzzy. Green explains the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, right? Which isn't just about our measurement tools being clumsy.
No, it's fundamental. It says there's a built-in limit to how precisely you can simultaneously know certain pairs of properties of a particle. The classic example is position and momentum. The more precisely you know where a particle is, the less precisely you can know where it's going, and vice versa. Reality itself has a fundamental fuzziness.
So things aren't definite until measured.
Pretty much. At the quantum level, reality is inherently probabilistic. Before you measure it, a particle doesn't have a definite position or momentum. It exists in a sort of cloud of potential states all at once, what physicists call superposition. The act of measurement forces it to choose one state.
Okay, probabilistic reality. And then there's quantum entanglement, Einstein's spooky action at a distance.
Spooky is definitely the word for it. Entanglement is this phenomenon where two particles can become linked in such a way that they share the same fate, no matter how far apart they are separated. If you measure a property of one particle, say, its spin, you instantly know the corresponding property of the other particle, even if it's light years away. Their fates are intertwined.
Instantly? Doesn't that violate the speed of light limit, like faster than light communication?
Ah, good question. It seems like it should, but the tricky part is, while the influence is instantaneous, you can't actually use it to send a meaningful message faster than light. The outcome of the measurement on your end is still random. You only know the correlation after you compare notes later. But still, it deeply challenges our intuitive notion of local reality, that things can only be influenced by their immediate surroundings.
So we have this smooth geometric theory of gravity for the large scale and this weird, fuzzy, probabilistic theory for the small scale. And they don't play nicely together.
Not at all. That's the central problem in fundamental physics right now. General relativity and quantum mechanics give spectacularly accurate predictions in their own domains, but they seem fundamentally incompatible when you try to apply them both, like the black hole or the Big Bang. Their mathematics clash.
Which leads us to the grand challenge, the quest for a unified theory, a single framework that can describe everything from quarks to cosmos. And that brings us to string theory.
Exactly. String theory is currently the leading candidate, maybe the only real candidate we have for reconciling gravity with quantum mechanics.
And the core idea is surprisingly elegant, actually. It proposes that the fundamental constituents of reality aren't zero-dimensional points, like electrons or quarks are usually pictured. Instead, they're tiny, one-dimensional, vibrating filaments of energy, like incredibly small guitar strings.
Right. Tiny, vibrating strings. And just like a guitar string can vibrate at different frequencies to produce different musical notes, these fundamental strings can vibrate in different patterns. And according to the theory, these different vibrational modes correspond to all the different fundamental particles and forces we observe. An electron is one vibration pattern, a quark is another, a photon is yet another. The universe is like a cosmic symphony played on these strings.
That's a beautiful image, but it comes with some baggage, right? Like extra dimensions.
Oh, yes. Here's where it gets really mind-bending. For the mathematics of string theory to work out consistently, specifically, for it to incorporate gravity smoothly alongside quantum mechanics, it requires that space-time has more dimensions than the three of space and one of time that we experience.
How many more?
Most versions of the theory require a total of 10 or 11 space-time dimensions.
10 or 11. So where are the other six or seven spatial dimensions?
The usual explanation is that they're curled up, like incredibly tightly compacted, perhaps down at the scale of the strings themselves, far too small for us to perceive directly. Imagine a garden hose.
Yeah.
From far away, it looks one-dimensional, like a line. But get up close, and you see it has a second circular dimension curled around it. The extra dimensions could be like that, but everywhere.
Curled up dimensions. Okay.
Yeah.
And this also leads to ideas like M-theory and brain worlds.
Yeah, string theory isn't just one theory. It evolved into a more encompassing framework called M-theory, which unified different versions and also introduced objects called brains, short for membranes, which can have various dimensions.
One fascinating possibility arising from this is the brain world scenario, where our entire three-dimensional universe might actually be confined to one of these brains floating within a larger, higher-dimensional space, sometimes called the bulk.
Our whole universe on a membrane.
Wow. And the final conceptual leap Green touches on is the holographic principle. Right, this is perhaps the most radical idea stemming from studies of black holes and string theory. It suggests that all the information contained within a volume of space, like everything happening inside this room right now, could actually be fully described by physics taking place on the boundary surface enclosing that volume. It's like saying our apparently three-dimensional reality might be a kind of holographic projection of information stored on a distant two-dimensional surface. It hints that space itself might be emergent, fundamentally built from information.
Okay, my brain officially hurts now. Let's try to distill this. What are the big takeaways, the key themes Green really wants us to absorb?
I think theme one is simply, reality is not what it seems. Our basic senses, our intuition, they evolve for survival on Earth at slow speeds. They're profoundly misleading guides to how the cosmos actually works at fundamental levels, both large and small. Relativity and quantum mechanics force us to accept this.
Yeah, that's crucial. And theme two flows from that. The malleability of space-time. It's not just a static backdrop, an empty stage. Space and time are dynamic players. They bend, they warp, they expand, they can be sliced differently. Thinking about that really changes how you view even seemingly static things around you. The stage itself is part of the drama.
Definitely. Then theme three, the arrow of time as a cosmic story. Our linear experience of time flowing from past to future isn't some fundamental law in itself. It's an emergent property tied directly to the universe, starting in that incredibly special, highly ordered, low entropy state at the Big Bang. Our personal perception of time passing is deeply connected to cosmic history and the relentless march towards disorder.
It frames our lives within cosmology, which is quite profound. And finally, theme four, the quest for unification. This historical drive, still ongoing, to find a single elegant master equation like string theory aims to be that describes all forces and all matter. It speaks to this deep belief among physicists that beneath all the complexity we see, there lies a fundamental simplicity.
That underlying simplicity driving everything.
Yeah. And Green has such a knack for phrasing these complex ideas memorably. You mentioned some quotes earlier.
He really does. One that captures general relativity so simply is basically, what we call gravity is nothing but the experience of moving through curved space-time. It just replaces that spooky force with tangible geometry.
I like that. And the one linking the everyday to the cosmic. The reason you can't unscramble an egg is the same reason you can't remember the future. Both reflect the relentless increase of entropy. It connects breakfast to the fate of the universe.
Ah, exactly. And for quantum mechanics, capturing its core weirdness. At its core, quantum mechanics tells us that the universe is a game of probability. The act of observation forces reality to take a stand. It highlights that strange role the observer seems to play.
Yeah, forcing reality to choose. And finally, that summary of string theory's ambition, everything may be made of one single ingredient, tiny vibrating strands of energy. The universe is a cosmic symphony. It just gives it this beautiful, almost musical elegance.
So, does all this incredibly abstract, mind-bending physics actually have any real-life applications? Or is it just, you know, interesting to think about?
Surprisingly practical, actually. The most obvious example is technological. Think about the GPS in your phone or car.
Oh, right. The satellites.
Exactly. Those satellites are orbiting Earth quite fast, and they're also in a weaker gravitational field than we are down here. Both effects from special and general relativity cause their clocks to tick at a slightly different rate than clocks on the ground.
Time dilation again.
Precisely. If the engineers didn't constantly account for relativistic time dilation, those GPS systems would become inaccurate by several miles every single day. Navigation would completely fail. So yeah, abstract physics keeps you from getting lost. And of course, quantum mechanics underpins lasers, transistors, computer chips, basically all modern electronics.
Okay, fair point on the tech. What about philosophically?
I think the biggest application there is fostering intellectual humility. Seriously. When you graph that 95% of the universe is made of stuff we don't understand and that our fundamental grasp of space and time through intuition is just plain wrong, well, it encourages a healthy skepticism towards absolute certainty about anything, doesn't it?
That's a really good point. It puts our everyday certainties in perspective.
And maybe even on a personal level, thinking about time differently.
Yeah, I think so. Contemplating that block universe idea where past, present, and future might, in some sense, coexist as fixed points in this 4D space-time structure,
it can actually be quite calming. It might lessen anxiety about the future, maybe. And it encourages you to appreciate the present moment as your unique slice through this grand, perhaps predetermined cosmic block. It adds weight to the now.
So, final takeaways. What really stuck with you or surprised you the most from this dive into Green's work? For me, it was really hammering home the dynamism of space itself. The idea that space isn't passive emptiness, but an active thing that warps and stretches, that's still stunning. And connecting my personal sense of time's flow directly back to the Big Bang's low entropy state, realizing every second ticking by, is part of that unfolding cosmic story that felt really profound.
Yeah, I agree with that. For me, the lasting message from Green and from physics like this is that science doesn't strip away wonder or mystery. Mm. It is the opposite. It amplifies it by revealing a universe that is just far stranger, far more intricate, and frankly more magnificent than we could ever have just imagined on our own. And the fact that we can understand chunks of it using abstract mathematics, it hints at this really deep, maybe even mysterious connection between our minds and the fundamental structure of the cosmos itself. It's quite hopeful in a way.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.